All right, morning, boys. Episode 5.
How morning. Very well, thank you. How are you?
Morning.
Very well.
Oh.
This week has gone particularly quickly. I was saying, I feel like nothing has happened. We're sort of just in this like little routine of just not much going on.
Yeah, it was kind of anticlimactic because Sunday was actually probably the only significant day I've had in about a month. Because obviously it was Easter Sunday, so we all like put a bit more effort into our appearance and...
Yeah,
I like,
exactly.
Had a bit of like nicer food and stuff, made a big effort, and then Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday happens again, and it's like, what is going on?
They all blur into one. I do think there's a very genuine thing here, which is I challenge anyone to consistently know what day of the week and what time it is. It's just there's nothing going on there. And as you say, it's like Sunday we all put in a bit of an effort because it was sort of an excuse to do something. But like, what's next? Because there's nothing now for ages that's sort of any importance.
Yeah, we don't even have the 3-week review as well. We've got to wait another 3 weeks now. That's
well, yeah. Although I'm saying this, you know, because it is, but it's almost 2 weeks now. This is the thing: is 3 weeks is now a period of time that is just insignificant. It's nuts. Anyway, we live and we move on. This week, so I've seen a lot of people. You say people like making effort for Easter Sunday. I've seen a lot of people having like themed nights at home. So they've just like on a Tuesday night just had a black tie dinner or an Indian themed dinner or sort of various different things. I'm not sure I could get on board with that.
I think I've let myself go a bit too far. I don't think I can crawl back to that sort of effort. It's too far gone.
I agree. We're too far down the road for that, as you say. If I think a jeans for me is an indication of quite a serious day. It's quite a serious setup. It's anything that other than what's on the floor.
I can't remember the last time I wore jeans. it's joggers.
Same clothes for like more than a week. You realise that all the days start to blur if you don't get changed. It's all just one very long day.
Mate, the lines do get blurred. That's what this podcast is here for. It's so that we all know, at least we know what one day of the week is. And we punctuate our lives and other people's lives and all that. We plugged it a bit last week, but reviews, we're really keen. Everyone get their reviews on, you can't do it on Spotify, but you can do it on Apple Podcasts. If you just search for the Jazz Lounge on Apple Podcasts, you can leave a review. But it doesn't show any reviews until there's enough reviews. I don't know how many, like 5 or 10 or something. But then we can get a little rating. And then you can tell us how good we are. And again, if it's bad, just leave it. just sack it. Don't be mean. Positive vibes. But do, yeah, get on and leave us a little review. Boy, should we have a music? What have we been on this week?
Yeah, let's kick it off.
Songs of the week.
Right, so I'm gonna kick off with a new release, which came out this week, well, earlier this week, I think 3 days ago. Freedom by Kygo. It really got me in that summer like mood. You know, I could just imagine sitting by the river, having some beers, end of exams.
Yeah.
It got me a bit nostalgic of past summers. I'm like, oh, what's gonna happen this summer? But
Kygo, he does it every summer, doesn't he? Right. Every sort of April or so releases this sort of tropical sort of summery song.
Yeah, he knows how to release a good song, doesn't he?
He does. He knows his market. He does very well.
Didn't he release another one a couple of weeks ago with Zara Larsson?
Yeah, so his 2020 releases are really good. I actually love the Avicii tribute song.
I haven't heard that one.
I think it was originally an Avicii song, and then Kygo finished it off and finished editing and essentially made it a tribute song. And I love that song. That came out earlier this year. They've done quite a few.
It's loads of singles, isn't it? I think this might be a dangerously close to being educational. But what all the like these DJs do, they don't bother with albums anymore because it takes ages to make an album, and you always have it on album like 5 good tracks and the rest are all crap. So I think what they do is because they're touring the whole time, they just make good songs and just release them as they go. But it doesn't mean you get a Kygo song every 4 months or something. Calvin Harris does it as well. He'll just release a song every sort of 3 a year. Just
I guess you're more likely to get like number one on the charts if you release one great song every now and then. People listen to it more, right, than a whole album.
Well, then mind you, do you remember when Ed Sheeran locked out the top 10 or something in the charts? There was when they first redid it to count streams, and like 8 of the top 10 were all Ed Sheeran songs.
But don't you think an album, I mean, this is kind of foreshadowing what we're talking about later, but don't you think an album kind of defines your career a lot more than just a load of singles? Because an album is a kind of a stamp of your career, on your career, whereas a single, I'm not sure. It depends. I don't know. If you get like 10 number ones,
but maybe it's different now, because previously you would sell your albums, but you're not, no one's buying music anymore. So I guess it's a debate. We should say our later on our debate, we're debating the greatest albums of the 21st century. And so yeah, I guess a discussion of like the purpose of an album will definitely come into play there. Harry, what's your
song of the week? Is called Falling in Love by Dennis Creation. And shock of the week, I found it on TikTok. But TikTok's my new Spotify, honestly. Can't get enough of it. But yeah, really good song. It's got a nice little drop. It actually came out in 2016, so it's been around for a while, but I had never heard of it before. But yeah, I've been jamming out to it as well. And then, been jamming out to quite a lot of stuff. I mean, don't know if you guys like Playboi Carti. He's about to release a new album, but he released a song called At Me. It's not that great, but anyway, it's gave it a bit of pleasure. But
I just think on this TikTok thing, I actually don't think finding songs on TikTok is a slam, because all the popular new songs become TikTok songs, and I don't know what that relationship is. I don't know whether they are good songs so they go on, or they are popular on TikTok so they become sort of top five songs or whatever. But they're the same now, so I actually think finding songs on TikTok is not a because that's all the good songs are there.
But also, some quite rogue songs really take off if they go on TikTok. There's one that's like Wonderland or something. Terrible. Welcome to Wonderland, which was like by some really like unknown guy, and it's done really well because it was used in like one viral TikTok. Obviously, shout out to the 15-year-olds. Yeah. Shout out to the 15-year-olds helping out
TikTok content creators. Yeah.
Yourself,
boys. My song of the week: Don't Need Love, 220 Kid and Gracie. I think this slaps. This is my best song of the week. I'm sure of it.
That's an outrageous claim.
No, I think it's certified. It's 100%. If we were in an era where, in fact, any other era of modern culture, this would be playing in the pubs, the clubs, the bars. People would be all over it. Now, all you can do is you can listen to it on your daily exercise. And you can like play it while you're in the shower, but it still pops off in the shower. It's still a great song, so I highly recommend those. We're still working on this playlist. We'll try and get all of these. Well, we've got the playlist. We just need to put it out there. We'll put all of our songs on the week on a playlist, and you all you don't even have to look for them. You can just find them on our Jazz Lounge playlist.
We've all kind of pinned down the same genre with this song of the week, haven't we? I'm assuming.
I think we've been. Yours
is quite a kind of an electric poppy style.
Yeah, mine's kind of electric dance. Mine's basically just like songs with maybe a bit of energy. I don't know.
That's deep, bro.
I'd say less,
deep,
but like, bro.
Bit of energy.
Yours are like good music.
I don't know. They
sort of well thought out, thoughtful lyrics.
So would you describe yours as Euro trash?
Mine.
Yeah.
It's not. I wouldn't call it Euro trash. I call it like. Pop dance, which is probably the rudest thing I can say about my music.
With a little bit of energy. Just a little bit of energy.
With a little bit of energy.
And then Kygo's Kygo. Kygo he's got his bracket nailed down, hasn't he? I kind of like those artists that get kind of like people you haven't heard of that just do really good vocals on the song, and then it's just got a very good beat to it. Like Stargazing's so good.
But I'd say you know how anal they are about it as well. Like Kygo and Zed is another one who's sort of similar, makes sort of a similar sounding type of song. But he will go through like 30 vocalists on one track, and he'll go to the point where he just won't release a song. He had the Middle. So he almost just didn't release it because he couldn't find someone that sounded perfect on it. Which I'm like, mate, like the vocals are good on that, but get anyone to sing it, it would still be a good song. And he was just about to not release it, and then he heard this vocal and he's like, I will give this a try, and then it was he liked it. But they're so angry about who sings it.
It's so funny you should say that, because I was actually reading about Clarity by Zed the other day, because I found an acoustic version, and it's one of my favourite songs. And he was like scouring YouTube to try and find someone to do the vocals for it. And eventually he got Foxes, and it helped kind of pick her up in the global sphere. But yeah, he went through so many different auditions and stuff trying to find this vocalist for this one song. It's crazy.
It's nuts, isn't it?
I suppose if it's your song, you want to get it right. But
I guess all in the pursuit.
And they've all been hit singles.
If you can call clarity perfection. Yeah, they all.
They've done something right, haven't they? Yeah.
Yeah. But is there any good TV we've watched this week? Or
you know what? Linking TV and music. I don't know if you guys have seen it. Last night I watched Yesterday, which is
nope.
The story about. It's quite a funny storyline. Essentially, the world has like an earthquake, or whatever. And everyone forgets who the Beatles are, what their music was.
Oh, I've heard about that. That sounded funny.
Except for one person who then recreates the music as his own and becomes really, really famous.
That's crazy.
was it good? Because it looked like it was a sort of fine line between cheesy, actually can't really stomach this, and potentially quite funny.
Oh, it is cheesy, but it makes you think how good the Beatles' music was. It's so good.
So the Beatles are alive in this.
No. So the Beatles, essentially everything about the Beatles is eradicated. All the albums, all the lyrics, music, everyone's memory of
except
it.
Except this one
completely
guy.
Completely gone. Except this one guy who, I think he got hit by a bus at the time, and basically he remembers everything. And so it's his story about trying to remember these lyrics and chords and then recreates it all. And everyone's like, wow, you're such a lyrical genius. And he's like, yeah, I guess. But he's just taking Beatles music.
I couldn't do it. I think I'd sack it. I'd just be like, you know, we've still got...
I think it'd be really difficult to remember the lyrics of the songs.
Also, I think if you released Hey Jude now, it would flop.
And he sings Back in the USSR, and I feel like that doesn't have the political message it would have back when it was released, you know?
Yeah, I'm going to say something a little bit controversial. Look, the Beatles make great music. But I would never open Spotify and listen to the Beatles. I listen to it if someone else plays it. I appreciate it's great music, but I wouldn't go out of my way to listen to it.
I don't know. I love the Beatles music. I absolutely love it.
That's the thing. I know my opinion is wrong. It's fundamentally incorrect, but the Beatles, losing the Beatles would be a small hole in my life. I think it'd be an enormous hole in some other people's
I'm the same. Yeah, the Beatles kind of passed me by. I never really kind of listened to the Beatles. I know the songs are the big ones, but if they didn't exist, it probably wouldn't really faze me. But
yeah,
I could appreciate how good big they were.
That sort of passion. Yeah, exactly.
Appreciate it. Also, there's quite a funny little joke in the movie where he also realises Oasis has disappeared. The band, and I think that was a joke about Oasis just copying the Beatles. So I think that was quite funny.
Yeah, fair. Also, if Oasis disappeared, I would lose zero sleep. I honestly could.
But I feel like the big songs from Oasis kind of impacted me more than the Beatles.
But that would make sense because they.
Yeah, I suppose.
Yeah.
I find a lot of Oasis really annoying, and I could if they got wiped off the face of the earth. Apart from obviously not knowing that they had ever existed.
But foreshadowing again what we're going to talk about, did they influence other artists? Would we have other artists without those guys?
Yeah, but it was so annoying. Like, I think anyone that sounds like the Beatles is just... I really don't listen. Anyway, we shall leave. I don't mean the Beatles, I mean Oasis. I have a real hatred for Oasis. Shall we push on? Let's have a look. So Sam, you've got a sports quiz for us.
I do,
which hopefully will be shorter than my charts quiz, which was quite long.
Yeah, shout out if you listen to that, nice to get through it.
If you made it through the whole thing of that charts quiz,
you're a true fan.
You also have no life.
Sunday mornings are a bit bare for those people.
Well, yeah, but whatever. You're putting music on a Sunday.
Oh, yeah.
So maybe you've got no TV. So, Samuel, sports quiz.
All right. So what inspired me for this little, it's a British sports quiz. And, you know, I was thinking, we haven't got sport in our lives at the moment. So I thought we'd relive some key moments in British
Lovely.
So we'll kick it off with some Formula One. I've got two questions in Formula One. So which team did Jenson Button win the Formula One World Championship in 2009 with?
Braun.
Yeah.
I'm going to have to bow out of this. My Formula One knowledge.
We're on F1.
Okay. Don't worry, I've only got one more Formula One question. To the nearest five, how many Grand Prix did Lewis Hamilton win? Or has he won?
In his career? Can you...
Yeah.
How long is his career, do we know? It's like 10 years?
Well, he's won... What's he on? 5 World Championships? 4 World Championships?
Yeah. I think... Yeah, a little bit more than that, yeah. The Grand Prix... Say... Since
he's racing since 2008, so he's been racing for 12 years.
There's quite a few. Yeah. There's quite a few races each year, isn't there? That's the most vague comment. Formula One fans are screaming at me right now.
Yeah, there's quite a few races.
I can't remember how many he's won. So let's imagine he's won.
Nearest 10 and have a guess.
I'm saying 130.
Oh, I was going to say like 40. I'm going to bump it up. Let's go 95.
Okay.
Yeah, you should have... Could
have
just got 129.
Verg wins because it was 84. So
that's
one all.
He pulls it out the
bag. Yeah, a little cricket question for mainly to work with. Which cricketer has the most test appearances for England? I'll give you a choice.
Alistair Cook.
Yeah, that's correct.
I was going to say that.
Exactly.
Okay. How many times has England won the Rugby World Cup and how many times have they been runner-up?
We've only won it once.
Yeah, that's correct.
Okay. And I'm saying runner-up twice, but that's a yes.
Okay.
I'm going to say 4.
Okay, you're both one off. It's 3, but I'm going to give the point to Whipple because he got the one World Cup. So I think it's 3-1.
What is this? Come on,
Harry, I'll back you in this one. Okay, this is an easy question for you now.
Lionel Messi.
Yeah.
What is the name? It's British sport. Just remember that. What's the name of David Beckham's new football club?
Into Miami FC.
Into Miami Club de Football.
Yeah. So I think Whipple got there first.
Oh, what? is this connection? Wow. My internet's bad.
Yeah, your internet connection's fine. I got the language right as well.
We've got a little golf question.
Oh, not golf. Ooh. Oh, no.
Who is the last British golfer to win the Masters? And a bonus point for the year when he won it and then the year of the previous winner.
Danny Willett in 2016.
Yes. And the last winner?
The last winner.
Before that.
As in last year.
The last British winner before Danny Willett.
Oh, I can't remember.
Was it Sandy Lyle?
I'm afraid not.
Is Justin Rose? No, he's not ever won a Masters, has he?
I'll give you a clue. It was in the 90s.
Oh, mate, I have no idea.
Okay, it was 1996. So I'll give you that bonus point because you got the year. So I think that's 6-1 now.
6-1. It's looking like a PSG Barca score. Gosh.
Final question, and obviously I had to put a tennis question in there. Which tennis tournament did Andy Murray win his first ever professional ATP match? I'll give you a clue. It was in England, and it's a famous tournament, but not Wimbledon.
Is it Queens, now known as the Fevertree Championship?
That is very true. Whipple, that's 7-1.
hello, Jeremy Brazil.
It's all right, Harry. Next week, you're in charge of the quiz.
Peak. Well, you know what? Those sports aren't my strongest. I'm more of a badminton kind of guy.
No, that was that. I feel that, to be fair.
Sorry, I didn't have. I
appreciate that. But to be fair, Harry, I did need a bit of a boost after my dismal showing last week in the world's quiz ever. I needed a bit of a boost up after that. Oh. After that, to really hit my reputation hard. Sam, I enjoyed that a lot, partly because I won, and partly because
Sam, I thought that was a shit quiz.
Yeah, to be fair.
Right, gents, we're back and continuing our debate series. Today's debate is the greatest album of the 21st century. What we've done, we've all picked three albums that we think are in contention. We're going to discuss a little bit about, you know, what an album is, what's the purpose of it, why do we care. We're going to lay out our choices, have a bit of a debate, and then we're actually going to put this to a vote. We're going to put it up on our Instagram at the Jazz Lounge Podcast in some little polls, and then we'll have a winner. And then next week we'll come back to this, discuss the winner, think, you know, with the sort of benefit of hindsight and reflection. What is that? Right, point of an album. Why do we give a shit, Harry? You're our kind of music buff.
Well, I mean, an album is, it's a way of kind of cementing a artist at that time. And also, it's an album at the time, and then there's an album at the end. I think an album at the end is quite interesting for listeners because it shows the progression of an artist as well. And I think you can convey so much more on an album than you can in a load of singles. And it's interesting to see how, I mean, I listen to a lot of hip hop, and it's interesting to see how that's changed throughout. And there's some of the albums that I talk about, I think have affected hip hop, but it's, I mean, an album is a way of kind of rubber stamping yourself as an artist, your genre, your kind of talents. And also, you know, it's a way of, you know, putting your music out there. You know, albums is what people want to listen to. And it's the best way of kind of, I think, presenting yourself to your fans.
Your album is your, it's your, it's like your creative portfolio, isn't it?
Yeah.
Like it's what you've done. It's also, it's sort of your legacy. It's what's left. It's because it's more than you, as you're saying, like your single is the hit. But actually a good album, the old albums had sort of narratives and themes and were sort of continuous. The songs were, you'd listen to them in the order and there would be a flow to it as a kind of feel to the album. So I think it's sort of extended. It's a sort of in-depth version of just a single, which is very short and kind of leaves you quite quickly. Is that fair? And they're less in fashion albums now at the moment, aren't they? We were sort of saying a bit earlier about how they sort of release a lot more singles now. But I think also in this sort of era of streaming, right? We listen to singles, we listen to playlists a lot more. But a playlist wasn't really a thing. You might have a mixtape. You used to like rip your CDs or whatever, or cassettes. But that was never a thing. So what you would do is you would buy the album, you go to HMV or you'd buy it from wherever you did, and you'd listen to the album, and because you'd paid $9.99 for it or whatever, you'd listen to the whole thing through. But I think now the way we consume our music, we naturally are drawn towards the singles, the flashy stuff. But I don't know how many people listen to albums as much anymore. And what I think is quite interesting is I don't think any of us, we're in 2020 now, so there's a 20-year span that we could have gone from. And I think we've all picked albums from the first decade, pretty much. Maybe, but certainly from the it's very heavily swayed towards the beginning of the century. Because maybe there's fewer great albums being released now.
I think. Well, a big part of an album is telling a story or a message. And I think to actually understand what an artist is trying to convey, you need to listen to the whole album. I think modern music. I'm not no sort of disrespect to modern music, but a lot of like music like Kygo or, you know, the singles they release, it's less political, there's less of a message really in it.
Yeah.
It's more feel good music. Whereas I think some of the albums we've picked are potentially political or quite emotional and have quite a big strong message which is conveyed with every single song of that album.
I think in terms of greatest, you want to think about influence, and I think it's a lot easier to see influence from 15 years ago than influence in 4 years or 5 years ago, because a lot of the artists that you, I mean, for instance, I'll talk about that. Drake, for instance, has many great albums, but I would argue that a lot of his work is influenced by Kanye back in the 2000s. And also, I mean, Kendrick's won loads of prizes. I mean, he won a Pulitzer Prize for Damn, didn't he? Which was groundbreaking. You could say that that's a great album because it was groundbreaking in that sense. I mean, we haven't picked any Kendrick albums, but he's obviously been making waves in the 2010s. But I think it's easier to look at influence and kind of its profound effect on music earlier. And then you get, probably get people who know more about music back in the day, like 1970s, 80s, who'd be able to say, yeah, that, oh, this has influenced this. But I don't know that far back.
Yeah.
But...
I know nothing about the narrative of music. For me, greatest, it's interesting, you talk about influence. For me, the greatest albums are the ones that I most enjoy listening to. And it's purely based on my enjoyment and my consumption of that. I guess maybe it's a little... songs. Distinguished musical palette that I have. I was like, how many bangers are on this album? For me, that's a sort of common man's metric. Whereas I think maybe a traditional sense of a good album is... it's more about like the overall thing rather than having three amazing songs on it.
But what constitutes a banger?
Mate, just something that I think is just a fantastic song. There's no science to my view on this. It's literally just like, yeah, great album. There's five songs I like on there, and the others are probably quite good as well.
But like, if you look at let's look at Scorpion by Drake, a big album. You've got kind of the bangers, like In My Feelings, for example, is quite poppy, whereas you could say that there's better songs that don't make it into the charts, but because it's not what the charts are looking for. But you still argue that they're probably better songs.
But that's your musical palette, mate. What you are,
I suppose,
you're a sort of refined customer who knows your sort of subtlety of flavours.
I wouldn't say that.
All I want is salt and chili flakes and just like, you know, easy consumption.
So what have we got?
Let's go one by one. Harry, take me through your first album.
So my first album is a Kanye West album, and it's kind of focuses on the influence. And it's 808s and Heartbreak, which is 2008, which came out kind of after a very tough year in Kanye's life, where he kind of broke up his engagement and his mother died as well. But it's kind of the birth of what a lot of people would think is like new hip hop, with you see in like artists like Lil Uzi and the late Juice WRLD, kind of emo rap with kind of the raw auto-tune. And it's an album that's basically just kind of alienation and heartbreak. I think personally it laid out groundwork for artists that came through in the 2010s, kind of like Drake. One of his first mixtapes, So Far Gone, he samples Say You Will with a song that he puts called Say What's Real. He uses the same, it's the opener, Say You Will is the opener to 808 Heartbreak, and it's just like an auto-tune kind of heartbeat kind of song. And it just shows that it kind of influenced these artists. And then Kid Cudi's album came out the next year. Kid Cudi actually helped Kanye with his album, and it kind of helped lift Kid Cudi to his solo career. And like Juice WRLD cited 808 as his favorite album, and a lot of people kind of believe that it did pave the way for other artists, and it was something that wasn't really seen before. And it's a far cry from, I know, other albums that Kanye did before, kind of Graduation, Late Registration, College Dropout, which is more kind of social rapping, social conscious rapping, and this was very much a rapping through pain and heartbreak, and this auto tune. Like the 808 was a synthesizer that came out in the
90s. That was that sort of movie era, no?
Yeah, and it was kind of frowned upon by a lot of people because it was kind of seen as a bit too harsh, and it wasn't used, and it ended up being sold quite cheaply to people because it didn't do very well, and Kanye kind of brought it back. And also it was kind of criticized as well. Like Jay-Z, he released a song called The Death of Autotune, I think, and he was trying to say that a lot of artists were now using autotune as like a crutch rather than a prop. I think it was a very influential album, and a lot of people, now you go back to it, I think it was kind of ahead of its time, which I know is quite a cliche thing to say, but when you think of the big Kanye albums, I mean, I know this is like hypocritical because I'm going to talk about one of his biggest later, but I think it kind of gets overshot, but actually it was so influential and so ahead of its time and paved the way for the rap that you see in the 2010s and you see today. Of like the painful kind of heartbreak, like Lucid Dreams just is iconic by Juice WRLD, just iconic of basically 808 Heartbreak. But yeah,
I'm going to slide in here, only because my first one is also a Kanye album. It's the album that comes before, it's Graduation. Now,
great album.
You have given the most amazing overview of the sort of industry and all that. I'm just, look, for me, it's an emotional thing, and it comes down to, I think Stronger is a shout for arguably the best song of the 21st century. And for me, when I grew up, I used to watch Four Music a lot on TV. We'd sort of chill Sunday, whatever, you'd stick that on. Stronger had the most amazing music video. And for me, this album, five main singles off it, Can't Tell Me Nothing, Stronger, Good Life, Flashing Lights, Homecoming. For me,
all bangers.
Those just soundtracked a period of my life, which was, so 2007, I was 10 years old. So that was when you first start listening to music by yourself, right?
Yeah, on the bus to school, stuff. Absolutely. Like that. Yeah.
You know, opened up my first iTunes account on parents' computer. Mm. I sort of spend pocket money buying songs. And these were, for me, this album, amazing. The album artwork, I still look at it, and that comes up on your shuffle or whatever, and you think, what a fucking great song. I agree. Well, look, to be honest, I think Kanye of that era, if you're taking like influence over a period, Kanye in the noughties, for me, probably, you know, is the modern equivalent of, I don't know, Beatles or Oasis, whatever the fuck you want to do. But for me, Graduation is probably my top pick.
It's so great, it's a great album.
So I'll stick with the rapping theme. I've gone for Eminem, his 2002 album, The Eminem Show. So it was quite tough because obviously Eminem released quite a few albums this sort of century, and all of them, in my opinion, are unbelievably good. I chose this one because I think this album shows a different side of Eminem, in the fact that a lot of his songs in this album are a little bit more emotional, a little bit slower. You hear sort of variety in the way he raps. Whereas, and I think he sort of matures quite a lot on this album. And I think his influence on hip hop and rap throughout the world is sort of encapsulated in this album. And I think, as great as Kanye was, I think Eminem also is one of the main
influences.
Yeah, completely agree.
I've never been a huge Eminem fan, but I can't, like, his music is amazing. It's absolutely amazing. But I just, I don't know enough about it to say anything more than just he makes great songs. And there obviously is a lot behind them as well. They're not sort of superficial songs. There's a lot of context and thought going into them.
Yeah. Also, I think quite a good thing about this album is, I mean, I read it about it. He produced most of it, like with Dr. Dre, but he made the beat, he did all of that, which I think was a reasonably new phenomenon, where you're singing, writing lyrics, and also the beat and producing, which I think is quite important.
I think also the fact that kind of hip hop back in kind of the start of the century was seen as a kind of a black music genre. And if you look at, I mean, one of the albums I have highlighted is the Marshall Mathers LP, which came out in 2000. If you look at, I mean, it was a record breaking album, and as a white hip hop artist who received quite a lot of criticism because of his race and the fact that he was meddling in what was a black music genre, I think it shows just how powerful his music was.
I think his song in that album called White America, it sort of sums up his influence in one thing. He talks about how he's mobilized this voice in America which has never been heard before. And he does speak quite heavily about, I think one of his lines was, if I was black, I would make half the profit. Like he makes comments about race.
Yeah.
He makes it very
clear,
which I think has made it's a repoliticized rap and hip hop.
Well, he's right. Harry, what's your second album?
Well, so my second album is actually the Marshall Mathers LP from 2000. Which is, am I correct in saying it's the one before yours, Tansy?
Yes.
I mean, be fair, it's very similar to what you were saying, but it's kind of the more brash Eminem. I mean, you've got songs like Kill You and Kim and Stan, which, I mean, the album drew a lot of kind of attention because it was controversial, and there's bits where he talks about kind of the Columbine school massacre. He talks about like impregnating Jennifer Lopez and choking women and the crazed fans he's seen Stan. And I think it was just interesting that you see a lot of kind of conscious rapping, conscious hip hop talking about kind of social changes, social mobilization. But I think for me, this album is kind of like reality TV kind of social commentary. He talks about different things that haven't really been seen before. I mean, like the things I just said, like talking about kind of celebrities and talking about kind of crazed fans. And I don't know, I think also the fact how successful the album was, where it was the fastest selling rap album in history and was the fastest selling album by solo artist until Adele came around. And it's just talked about like kind of pain and storytelling, and it outsold kind of the hip hop titans. When you think at the time, it was like Snoop Dogg and Wu-Tang Clan and Jay-Z all released albums, and he outsold them. And the Outkast as well. But I mean, it's just kind of the story of Eminem, basically, like Tansy said. But this one's kind of more full of hate and kind of the brash nature. I suppose it's kind of like Kanye's Beautiful Dark Twisted Fantasy, kind of. It's kind of the self kind of hate. It's similar to what Tansy said. I think those two kind of go hand in hand, don't they? Of kind of the narrative of Eminem.
Absolutely, and also iconic of the noughties of that era as well. Sort of will have soundtracked a lot of people's memories of that.
I remember the first time I heard Kim, I was like, what am I listening to? It's just so, it's like an assault on the senses, and it's just like, how is this music? But then I end up listening to it like on repeat, and I felt kind of guilty listening to it because it's such a horrible song.
He has no shame in saying what he wants, which I think is a great thing.
Well, I mean, a lot of people thought it was kind of misogynistic, and he's a homophobe, and there's quite a few homophobic lyrics as well, which...
It's interesting because I was actually listening to Lorelei, and in his most recent album, in Revival, he talks about, there's a song about Trump called Like Home, and I think it's amazing because he basically speaks about on behalf of all the minorities and essentially says Trump's a racist, all of this. And it's amazing progression from his earlier music, which was very sexist, racist, homophobic, and then in his later albums he's sort of supporting.
Yeah, it's crazy. Yeah, he talks about like I think he talks about choking his own mother in one of the songs, and then
That's the thing, it's a little bit dark. Boys, so my second album is, I think, again, it's of the same era, Rihanna, Good Girl Gone Bad, which I think you can make a very good argument that is not, in terms of quality of music, maybe not up there with some of the other albums. But for me, in terms of, and I think this is one that, you know, people of our age group, this is the album that you would have heard on the radio when you were going to school during your childhood, or on the school bus, or, you know, games, or as I say, like when we first got hold of music. This was out there, 2007, and singles, Umbrella, Shut Up and Drive, Hate That I Love You, Don't Stop the Music, Rehab. These are still timeless, great songs. And I think if we're on the influence thing here, first of all, Rihanna's got more good songs than, you know, than some countries in terms of like output. But I think you probably, and I don't know this, it's an absolute speculation, but a lot of modern female pop icons probably can draw their roots back somewhere to Rihanna and that sort of genre of just really good pop music, strong female lyricist, and just great songs, good to listen to. And even 13 years later, just fantastic album to listen to.
But yeah, I mean, it's a completely different kind of area to the hip hop albums we've been talking about. I mean, you would never compare Rihanna with, like, you know, Eminem. But I mean, I completely agree. Like, I remember Disturbia. I used to listen to nonstop.
Yeah.
I mean, it crushed the pop charts, didn't it? It was such a good album.
It was everywhere. You couldn't get into a car without listening to
it. 2007. Bloody hell.
Even just listening back to this. There's one with Maroon 5, which I'd never heard before. And it's like, fuck, that actually, if that got released now, it'd be a great song. I think, you know, great album. And I'm fully appreciative of the fact that it, you know, musically maybe hasn't got the layers or the depth to it, but actually, fuck, it's a great album to listen to. It's really good. And it soundtracks a part of our life.
I think you can tell if it's a good album if it's got kind of seminal records that come up again and again. And Umbrella is one of those songs that will come up again and again. And it's one of those songs that it's, I mean, I know, well, for people that don't know, that we're, all three of us are part of a football club, and Rihanna is one of the big songs that we listen to. But I mean, we're 20-year-old males and we're still bringing up a 2007 song by Rihanna as a go-to song to sing out loud that everyone knows.
But also, not just Umbrella, as you say, because it's got an affiliation with an institution, but like Don't Stop the Music.
Yeah, Shut Up and Drive.
Or Shut Up and Drive. That is a song, if that comes on the radio, you think, oh, fuck, I've not heard this in ages. What a good song. I think also Rehab, underrated single. But that's my second one. Sam, what's your...
So I've gone for 2000 Parachutes by Coldplay.
Yeah, good.
I don't, you know, some people, you either love Coldplay or you don't. I feel like it's a lot of people find them a bit dull, boring, a bit nothing. However, I think they're just great. I love their music. Parachutes in particular made Coldplay a household name. It was their big break. I love the variety in the music. It's quite a slow album, a lot of emotion in a lot of the songs. And I think it just paved the way for music like that, like U2, like REM. It brought back that sort of music, that sort of slow boy band kind of music. And I thought it was great. Absolutely great.
100% agree. I'm going to save some of my thoughts because my next album is another Coldplay album. But that on that album in particular... I agree. Brilliant. Just really good British pop songs. And as you say, almost like a sort of potentially a rebirth for sort of British boy bands. Because I think back to that era and a lot of them are really annoying. Like McFly, like that lot. I think there was a lot of trashy pop going around. And those Coldplay albums and Parachutes especially was proper British music, boy bands, sort of back where they should be. But proper music, not sort of chart chasing pop crap.
Yeah.
Really quality music.
I mean, they 2000. I mean, Coldplay have been at the top for what, 18? Yeah. I mean, provided that, you know, this album, you know, took off for about a year or two. They've been at the top of their game for 20 years. It's crazy. I mean,
can I hop in? So Parachutes was. Parachute when Parachutes X and Y Viva La Vida, I think. Is that right?
There's a rush of blood to a head, X and Y.
That's right. Okay, I've missed that one. That's right.
Yeah.
My album is Viva La Vida, 2008. Yeah. And again, I very not intentionally, but my albums are 2007, 2007, 2008. This is when we are 10, 11. Mm. And for me, Viva La Vida, I maybe controversially sort of steps away a little bit from, as you say, slightly slow pop, but really good British music. Viva La Vida took Coldplay worldwide. I mean, this was their first album that just went around the world and sort of hit in every single global market. And I think when you play Coldplay and you sort of play their montages, you obviously play the most recent stuff, but I don't think you can get much past Viva La Vida, the single.
Yeah.
And for me, this is a good example of an album has to be more than a single, and this one is. This single was so big. For me, it actually defined it. That was the moment that Coldplay went from being a really good, like, top-level British band to being maybe, like, certainly up there top five bands in the world.
Yeah.
And again, just in terms of soundtracking our childhood, my childhood especially, I remember going to watch Coldplay live at Wembley. It was my 11th birthday present. This album just came out.
Mate, big birthday. Blimey.
Coldplay had Jay-Z supporting them at Wembley. Yeah. Now, I think you fucking made it when Jay-Z is your woman.
That's crazy. That's crazy.
I think this is an amazing album. Look, I love all of Coldplay's albums. The early stuff is, I think you almost have to look at it in two separate lenses because the early stuff is quite different to Viva La Vida and after.
Completely.
This, I was a trendsetter, and I actually think a trendsetter in terms of to that sort of upbeat pop music,
mm.
which if you think you listen to charts now, it's all upbeat, happy, like sort of euphoric music. This was one of the first tracks to do that properly and do it well with good music. So I, mm. me, this is right up there. 2008, it's still timeless. Brilliant album.
I completely agree.
Harry,
so my last one is basically just going on one of my favourite albums. Well, probably my favourite album of all time. A lot of people know it. A lot of people like it. My Beautiful Dark Twisted Fantasy, Kanye, 2010. I mean, you could make an argument that it's probably the most influential album for him because it came out after his kind of like breakdown in society. You know, there's the famous the VMAs when he took the mic off Taylor yeah. Swift and said that Beyonce had a better video than
that
her.
Was terrible.
And then yeah. he comes back. I don't know if it was a year or two later, and he performs Runaway live for the first time. At the VMAs, and I mean, Runaway is I think one of the best songs ever made. It's 9 minutes, and you just don't get bored, and it changes so much. And I just think the album is so good in terms of the production, the songs, but also I just love like the arrogance and it's basically an apology to society about himself, which he basically epitomizes on Runaway. About kind of toasting to the arseholes, and he always finds something wrong. But I mean, it's just banger after banger. I mean, if you listen to it, I think it's one of those albums you can listen to with there's no fillers. Kind of similar. I was discussing this with you two the other day about Take Care by Drake. I'd say similar. But I just think that this is another level and Take Care is a great album, but this is just another level.
I can't pick any holes in this because I came to sit down and I had a Graduation and Dark Twisted Fantasy, and I was only going to pick one of them. I think they're both fantastic albums. I obviously went the other way, but this is, I mean, as you say, the singles on it, like Power, Runaway, Monster, All of the Lights. For me, All of the Lights is, again, I think up there with just potentially one of the greatest songs.
Yeah.
And I know that's so subjective and that's a ridiculous claim, but it's just such an iconic album, and I think I agree. It's more than an album because there's an arrogance to it.
It's yeah.
It's more than it's the whole thing. It's the beginning of that. I mean, like this is timeless. All this album is still
the topics as well. I mean, he talks. I mean, it's pornography, kind of celebrity corruption. Sex, violence, drugs, and also I think every single feature on the album is one of the best features or one of the best performances from that artist. I mean, Devil in a New Dress, I think, is one of my favorite songs as well because I love the instrumental, but Rick Ross on there is amazing, and then Pusha T and Runaway as well, and then Monster, Nicki Minaj, who I don't really like, kills it, and then Lost in the World with Bon Iver as well. It's just amazing. But yeah, it's probably, I mean, I wouldn't say it's as influential. It's as influential as maybe Yeezus or 808, which I think is the most influential. But in terms of my personal taste,
right, mate. Look, we could have made this whole list of Kanye albums. He's that good. What we're going to do is we've picked nine. We're going to
put Tansy's still on it. Tansy, you've still got to talk about your last one, don't you?
I'm going to plug my last one.
Yeah, sorry, no, I plug your last one.
I would say this is actually my favourite out of the three and most influential out of the three. Back to Black, Amy Winehouse.
Yeah, we can't leave that one out.
I'll keep it brief. I think she broke the mould of female pop singers at that time. I think, you know, at the time it was like Britney Spears. It was very poppy, dancey music. And I think she broke the mould completely and made her name with not having to follow the trend. And the lyrics are amazing, the vocals are amazing. And I think it's just such an iconic album.
Oh, wait, 2006 when that came out was,
yeah.
I mean, this was, as you say, this is, that came out and I think people said at the time, this is one of the greatest albums that I've ever made.
I think.
So I think as well, the story that goes alongside it, because there was obviously that such a sort of personal tragedy side to it, that this amazing artwork came out of such a troubled person and obviously ended so tragically,
yeah,
adds another sort of dimension to it. And like, you know, is Rehab's on this album, isn't it?
Mate, yeah. I'm just looking at it now. There's it's so fun. Many good songs on there.
Rehab, she ended up dying in Rehab. That was one of her singles on this album.
Me and Mr. Jones, Back to Black, Love is a Losing Game, Tears Draw on Their Own, Someone Holy War, bloody hell. So good. Oh, you know I'm no good. I just skipped that one. You know, that's one of the best ones.
I tell you what would be a brilliant, if Amy Winehouse was still here, an Adele versus Amy Winehouse. If Amy Winehouse had a full discography, that would be an epic lineup. And I think Amy Winehouse would win. But mate, unbelievable album. As you say, also really good because 2006 was slightly before our time, where we're sort of conscious of music.
Mm.
So for it to leave an impression with us is, it sort of speaks more of it, because it would have had to linger around for a few years for us to sort of be conscious enough to be like, "Fuck, that's a good song," and then remember it as well.
When did she die? Was it?
Did she
release another album after it?
Did a few singles, because she did a bit of stuff with Mark Ronson, didn't she?
Yeah.
She passed away in 2011.
Oh, blimey.
And in terms of the rest of her stuff, she never released another album. But she did have some more songs that came out, and she did some cover stuff, but no, nothing, no more full albums. I mean, terrible, but so, great music.
There was a written album which never released, obviously. Where I think she died before it was released, but then they released it posthumously, and I think it's called Hidden Treasures, and that's essentially an album she was writing at the time.
But they made that film or documentary about her, Amy, yeah. Which I think, did we discuss on the podcast? I think I discussed it with someone recently. No. I didn't hear, but yeah, I think that's one to watch as well, isn't it? Apparently it's amazing. But see, this is your favorite album.
I would say out of the three I've put out, I think right. So.
Right. Yeah, fair.
Yeah,
completely agree.
So we've got 9 unbelievably good albums. We obviously need to get, for it to be called a finals, we need to narrow it down to 8. So what I think, unless you boys say otherwise, what we'll probably do is we'll pair off one of or two of the Kanye West albums in a little sort of playoff to get into the quarters. And then it'll be the rest of the four, sorry, the rest of the other 8 albums, or the remaining 8 albums, quarterfinals. We'll find a way to seed them, I reckon. We'll list our preferences, so we'll put my favorite against someone else's third favorite and vice versa or something like that, and that'll be up on our Instagram, on our stories. We'll do it probably over the next week, over the next few days, and we'll park this and we'll come back to this next week when we've got a winner. But also, we'll, you know, let's have a go back, have a listen to these albums, and see if we've got any sort of more thoughts a week later. But fuck,
yeah, it is. Yeah, I mean, we've got through some good content there, I think. We obviously all love our albums. I feel like we've kind of hit a demographic of hip hop quite hard. But I mean, there's so many other genres that we haven't even covered, which I know a lot of people listen to. But we can only be ourselves, I suppose. So sorry if we've missed out genres of music, because we've hit pop and hip hop quite hard. But
I'm sure we've missed out some crazy ones. Obviously, let us know. We'll pick them up next week when we sort of finish this discussion off properly.